Hello. I know I need to move this cursor. Oh, but just this was sort of distracting me in other presentations, so I have no relationships to disclose. I'm reporting on a paper I did with a colleague, Janice Bell, who is a professor at Betty Irene Moore School of Nursing at Davis. We know that childhood obesity is a major public health concern and that over a third of the children in the U.S. are overweight or obese. This graph from NHANES data show that there's been an increase in the last few decades, and we know that childhood overweight and obesity is associated with poor health outcomes and increased health expenditures later in life. We also know that overweight and obese children are likely to be overweight or obese as adults. In 2007, an expert committee from the American Medical Association, the Health Resources and Service Administration, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention convened to create new guidelines for the prevention, assessment, and treatment of child overweight and obesity to be delivered in the primary care's office. These recommendations call for the universal assessment of body mass index and counseling related to diet and exercise. They apply to all children regardless of weight class, and they advocate greater efforts to prevent weight issues in the presence of maternal obesity or maternal diabetes. It's unclear if these recommendations change the practices of pediatric providers or if they work to prevent childhood obesity and overweight. Prior to the recommendations, there were differences found in the delivery of prevention messages across weight classes. Cook and colleagues found that obese children received counseling about diet and exercise nearly three times as often as non-obese children. The expert committee recommends counseling to all children regardless of their weight class, and it's unclear if these differences persist after the recommendations. Following the release of the recommendations, pediatric providers appear to be unaware that they exist. In 2010, Klein and colleagues surveyed providers and found that only half were familiar with the recommendations of the committee. And finally, we do not know if these recommendations have their desired effect. About 70% of providers doubt that the recommendations work, and a U.S. task force convened to evaluate weight-related interventions identified the need to evaluate counseling to normal and overweight children. Therefore, we ask the following questions. Do children classified as normal weight or overweight receive the same recommended screening and weight-related counseling as their obese peers? What factors predict the receipt of recommended counseling? And does recommended counseling have an effect on a child's weight status 1 year later? We examined data from the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey, a nationally representative survey of the civilian, non-institutionalized U.S. population. MAPS employs an overlapping panel design with data collected in five survey rounds over 2 years, allowing for an analysis of the effect of an intervention in the subsequent year. Data in MAPS are self-reported, usually by the child's mother. Our sample included children and youth aged 6 to 17 who had at least one office-based provider visit in the previous year. We excluded children if their BMI were missing or if they were classified as underweight. We linked children to variables collected about their parents, and we pooled data from 2008 to 2011 to increase our sample size. Our total sample included 3,043 children and youth. To measure receipt of weight-related screening and counseling, we used three indicator variables examined dichotomously: having both height and weight measured, receipt of counseling from a provider related to healthy eating, and receipt of counseling related to exercise. Our second outcome variable for the question of whether this guidance has an effect on a child's weight status a year later was the child's BMI Z-score in the second year of the survey. The Z-score is the child's sex and age-specific BMI relative to U.S. growth charts, and we use the Z-score rather than absolute BMI due to the expected age-related increases in height and weight as part of normal childhood development. Our primary predictor variable was the child's weight classification. BMI was categorized as normal in the 5 to 84th percentile, overweight 85th to 94th, and obese 95th percentile and above. Because we know that that obese children have higher odds of receiving these recommendations from previous studies, we use them as our reference group. The predictor variables we were most interested were those that match the expert committee recommendations. Those are the maternal factors such as weight class and diabetes status. Maternal weight classification was based on adult measures, self-reported, from height and weight. BMI of 18 to 24.9 as normal, 25 to 29.9 as overweight, and obese as 30 or above. Diabetes status was a dichotomous variable based on the mother's report. In the analysis of weight status in year two, the predictor variables were whether or not the child had received screening and counseling, so we used our indicator variables from our first models. We also included the child's BMI Z score from year one. Variables expected to influence the receipt of counseling and screening were selected a priori based on the Anderson and Adey model of healthcare access and utilization and include predisposing, enabling, and need factors. Descriptive statistics were used to summarize all study variables by receipt of weight-related counseling and screening. We used logistic regression to model each binary outcome of receipt of screening or counseling as a function of the child's BMI classification in both unadjusted models and models controlling for the covariates. Multiple linear regression was used to model the child's BMI Z-score in year two as a function of the BMI Z-score in year one and the other covariates. We also used MEPS guidelines for pooling data across years and survey commands and person level weights. So here are some of our demographic percentages. On the right, you can see the percentage of each category in the total sample. More than half of our sample was normal weight and about a quarter overweight and a quarter obese. Maternal diabetes was present in only 7% of our sample. The left three columns show the percentages of receipt of exercise counseling, diet counseling, and BMI screening. You can see pretty much everyone had their height and weight measured. You can also see from these raw percentages that kids classified as obese received more counseling overall. I've highlighted counseling about diet here, and you can see that 75% of obese children reported receiving it, while only 61% of normal weight children reported receiving diet counseling. These are some of our results from the logistic regression. We controlled for the covariates I mentioned earlier, but I'm only showing you the results of our variables of interest. Again, the reference group is obese children, and for maternal weight class, the reference group was normal weight mothers. And here you see lower odds for children classified as normal or overweight than obese children for receiving guidance about exercise or diet. And maternal weight classification does not appear to be predictive of receipt of counseling. It looks from this chart that having a mother with diabetes is significant and that those children with mothers who have diabetes have almost twice the odds of receiving counseling about diet. However, we're not really sure we trust this due to the small sample size of children whose mothers did have diabetes. Remember, that was only about 7% of our sample. These are results from our multiple linear regression, looking at the association between counseling and the BMI Z score from year two. We did not find evidence of a decrease in BMI Z score a year later. When a child receives counseling, it's associated with a small increase in the BMI Z score a year later. More telling, perhaps, is the association with the child's baseline BMI Z score. The Z-score at baseline is associated with a BMI Z-score in the second year that is more than 3/4 standard deviation higher. It's not shown here, but the only significant predictor of a decrease in the child's BMI Z-score in year two was being age 6 to 11. In a national sample of children and youth, we find evidence that children classified as normal weight or overweight have lower odds of receiving rate-related counseling. So we cannot say that the rates of counseling children have changed since Cook and colleague examined this prior to the recommendations. In fact, it does not appear that the recommendations to extend counseling to children across all weight classes are being followed. We also find that maternal risk factors, such as maternal BMI, are not predictors of receiving guidance, again, despite the recommendations to assess family history as part of a child's risk factor. We find evidence that pediatric weight prevention counseling alone is not effective in reducing childhood overweight or obesity, and that children who are already overweight or obese will continue to gain weight in the subsequent year. There is evidence that moderate to high intensity behavior programs are effective in reducing weight in children and youth, but we did not find that messages delivered in the pediatric provider's office had their intended effect. The study has many strengths. It's a national representative sample, it has a longitudinal design, and it allows for the assessment of BMI Z score in the subsequent year, but it has significant limitations as well. MEPS data are self-reported, so we cannot be sure if these messages were actually delivered, and we're actually only measuring maternal perception of these messages. It would also be ideal to know exactly what the provider talked to the family about, how long he or she spent with the family, and what other resources or referrals were given. We don't have those data. And just because a provider's office measured height and weight, we do not know if the office calculated the BMI or if the provider reviewed this calculation. Finally, we have no way to know if the children in our sample participated in other weight-related interventions outside of their primary care provider's office. In summary, we find that obese children have higher odds of receiving prevention messages, and that despite the expert committee recommendation that weight-related counseling are offered to children across all weight classes, pediatric providers are still offering these messages to obese children more than other children. Given the opportunity pediatric providers have in helping children and families prevent weight-related health risks, adherence to the recommendations is an important step in reducing childhood and overweight and obesity. Our findings question the effectiveness of this counseling, however. We found a small increase in BMI Z score at year two to be associated with weight-related counseling. We also found that this increase was associated with the child's baseline BMI Z score and maternal obesity. Therefore, the prevention of pediatric overweight and obesity requires a focus on the health of the whole family, and provider messages targeted to mother-child dyads might be a more effective approach. Yeah. That would be a good recommendation, that all children, regardless of, quote, risk, maternal risk factors, should get the advice. Yes, I would agree with that. Especially given the fact that prevention is the way we need to move forward with this. And the expert committee recommendations really emphasize assessing the readiness of the family to hear messages and participate in weight reduction behavior change. So, yeah, family-centeredness is definitely important. No, that's not available at that level in MEPS, yeah. Yes. Thank you. And we don't actually have that information. The question in MEPS is, in the last year, has a doctor or provider spoken to you about healthy diet or about exercise? So it's sort of, yeah, could have been a one-time, or, you know, that one of our limitations is that it's the maternal perception. So we don't know actually what the messages were or how well they were received, or, you know, that's a big limitation. Six to 17. Yes. Yeah.
So most likely, though, even up to 10 or 12, the mother is still in the room with the doctor counseling the child, so that they did, some of them see that education too, or counseling. But mothers who don't see their children as being in trouble don't usually act.
True. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Yes.
Did you compare to studies in other countries? So, for example, in England, there's the National Child Measurement Program that takes the height and weight measurements of every child who steps in at year 6, and it provides a standardized response to parents about where they are against the set times, and then a referral through to further support.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. Yes.
It's every child in England.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, thanks.